This is an interview with Edward Glass for the YSU Jewish Senior Citizens Project by Carrie Stanton at the Jewish Community Center on Gypsy Lane in San Ohio on December 7th, 1983, at approximately 1:30 p.m. Okay. That's what I want to talk to. I heard that. I have to talk to this man. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Okay. Well, we usually start with your childhood. You know, what do you remember? Where were you from? Your parents?
Well, if I could remember, I don't remember where I was. My youngest childhood, I was born in Canton, Ohio. And I guess we must have moved when I was. I can't remember entering into Youngstown, and I do remember points of my childhood as a Jewish, being raised as a kosher Jew. You know, we had the
you were Orthodox.
We were, if I can remember correctly. We had the dishes for the milk and the pots and pans, and then I mean another cupboard with the. What they call the meat dishes, milk and the meat dishes.
Why'd they do that?
The only thing I could, from what I've learned later in life, was it was just tradition. Tradition, and the meat had to be killed by a person that was authorized to do this. It was, and they would, from my understanding, they would, this person would examine the intestines of the beef, and if it didn't look good, forget it. It wasn't kosher. And they have their ways of doing things.
How did they, who was the person that did this? Were they, it wasn't the rabbi.
No, not the rabbi, a shofar or whatever they call, I don't know the word, but he's the fella that slaughters. Now, when you slaughter a beef, you don't, see, the way they slaughter commercially is they hit them in the head. And that wherever they had their cross for slaughtering the cattle, and they'd hang them up on one foot, and that's it. But they didn't hit, for kosher beef, they didn't hit the cattle on the head. They just, he come down the chute, but he was hanging by one leg, the hind leg, and this chauffeur or whatever, I don't know if I'm saying the right word or not.
I'll find out what it is.
But, he was authorized to do the, make the kosher kill. And they'd use a long knife, and with one sweep of the knife, you don't go back and forth, one sweep of the knife, and then they cut the throat. And they, while it was hanging, they let it bleed out. And that's from my understanding, and at that time, only the upper half of the cattle was kosher, not below. They cut it, they cut the beef in four quarters. You had two quarters of the upper, no hind quarters were at that time. Now, I don't think it's been changed over here, but they tell me lately in Israel it's been changed because the prices in the lack of food. So the whole thing I understand now, I'm not sure, don't quote me. But I'm not sure, but that's what I understand. With the high cost of living the way it is today, when they kill a beef for kosher, they, the whole thing is. So that's and that, another thing I can remember when I was small, we lived on the south side of Youngstown. And before I went to school, my mother first had a fish market in Youngstown, down where the public market is, about a couple doors down from the square was a big market. They sold bread in the window. They sold meat. They sold dishes, groceries, and way in the back, my mother had her fish market.
Mm-hmm.
And then days, the fish used to come in and was delivered by Railway Express. Either come from Boston or Buffalo, and depending on the fish you're buying, you can get lake fish, ocean fish, but they'd ice it. They had no refrigeration at that time, and they'd ice it. And then along the way down from Buffalo or from Boston, wherever a train was stopped to pick up passengers, they were making sure it was iced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way my mother used to get her fish. Used to say she'd buy a fish at 3 cents a pound, sell it for 5 cents a pound. She was scrounging out and living, but when she'd come home, she'd say, handling, then she had to take the ice man and break ice to the store, and she'd have to chop it up fine and get it around the fish and keep it fresh. And she knew how to do the fish business very well.
Was she the support of the family?
Yes, I would say yes. My mother was. My father, he was, I don't know, how would you put it, a drinker.
Oh.
He was a drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd make a sale. He'd help her there, no, not too long. Mm-hmm. When he got enough in his hand, he'd go to the bootlegger. Them days, all downtown, even they had what they call, where you can go get a shot, and you sit there long enough, they'll clean you.
Uh-huh.
It'll take your pockets inside out.
Uh-huh.
But she left that store. She went down one day to go open a store, and it was padlocked. She couldn't understand. But she knew then the other people that had, there was a fellow by the name of Moskowitz that rented this whole storeroom, and then he divided it up and rented this much for so much, here for so much, and for her fish he paid so much, for the groceries another fellow paid. Everybody shared the rent, but he wasn't paying the rent evidently.
Uh-huh.
So being the rent wasn't paid, I don't know how long, they padlocked. So she knew, back in Youngstown at that time, on Champion Street, the YMCA, right across the YMCA, and I can remember that vaguely, because when I was, after I got a little older and started to go to school, I still went downtown to sell newspapers. That's the way a kid made for clothes or whatever can help with the house. Because that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was. You didn't say, hey, Ma, give me a quarter. You brought the quarters to Ma.
Mm-hmm.
And you lived as a family.
Mm-hmm.
But she went to this, there was a doctor and his two sisters. His two sisters were school teachers, and they owned this property. She went to the door around the corner from where the storeroom was, and the maid wouldn't let her see the sister or the doctor, the brother, to see about opening up the store. But she didn't know that Dollar Bank handled all that. If she'd have known that, she'd have went to the Dollar Bank and said, hey, give me the store and I'll open it and I'll do the business.
Right.
If she knew, she didn't know exactly where to go.
Mm-hmm.
Being from Europe, and,
but
she had a head on her shoulders, I would say. Yeah, very, very keen. But anyhow, after that deal, I find she had bought a grocery store, what they call it Monkey's Nest in them days, over from Westlake Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
She bought a grocery store. And
not in Briar Hill.
Not now. It's down
in
the, what they call Monkey's Nest. They call it Monkey's Nest in them days. And there was bakeries there. Every corner had a store.
Really?
There was people. Yeah, and
down
on
like
Manning Avenue.
To the...
As you go up the Westlake Crossing,
yeah,
you bear to the left and go down West Rain Avenue, and back in there was called Monkey's Nest.
There's no houses back in there
now,
is there?
Not now. But there was a lot of homes.
What kind of neighborhood was it? Ethnic?
Ethnic. There was Slovaks, Polaks, colored. There was some colored. Not too many because Campbell didn't bring them up to Youngstown yet. And it was an ethnic neighborhood. Neighborhood. And it had...
Never heard anybody talk about that.
Bakery. And Balkan Bakery was in there. And that was in there was what they call the upper mill, U.S. Steel. Had a mill in there. Which was later taken over by Brigham Manufacturing, which they made Chrysler bodies here. In the 50s. 50s or late 50s. And she had a grocery store, but she moved out. On Manny Avenue, she moved out. Brought all the groceries up where we lived on Wabash on the south side and put them up in the attic. She's going to look for a place downtown. So she went downtown. She opened up the fish market and had the fruit. I remember I used to run ride a little kitty car with the wooden wheels before I even entered school. I remember that very well. Very well. I remember one day she sent me for soup back through the back and on North Watt Street. There was a restaurant in the back of the store, in the back of the restaurant. Pretty close. But anyhow, I went and took the pail. I forget what she gave me. It wasn't much. Maybe a quarter, who knows. And when I got to the back door, she says, go get some soup. She told me where I went. And I got to the back door, and I remember to this day. Big guy with a bald head. He had his apron on, but he had a big mustache, and I looked at that, and I turned, and I remember running underneath the fruit stand, just where I slept, running underneath the fruit stand. My mother said, what's the matter, what's the matter? Hey, I'm scared the devil out of me, you know, I had big, like a big Turk, you know, scared the devil out of me. And I, after a few years, went to school. I don't remember my dad that much. Because he was always stupid. My mother kept, she bought the house where we lived from her sister.
She was the real breadwinner in the family then. How many were there?
There was my brother and myself and three sisters. And I was the youngest. But
you remember the Depression?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
There was a lot around here.
Well, as a youngster still going to school, I there was always something on the table. My mother always had something on the table because she had the house she had bought was a four family home. You know.
Did she have a hard time meeting
ends? No. She always some way somehow from the rent. She always and she was a saver. But. Youngster, you know, I remember the Depression, but to say we were hit, like some family, because I remember a lady had come crying, taking her house, and then the neighbor come over, oh, don't cry, Mrs. So-and-so, don't cry. So how can you help a woman losing her house? In the next week, the one that said don't cry, she was crying because her house was if you couldn't make a payment, they didn't mess with you. And they didn't give you no. They just, the banks just took it. So it was, you couldn't make the payment? No, oh, pay me interest. They held it. Like they say today, you go get a loan, they hold you up with a pen. You don't need a gun. But them days, it was cruel.
Yeah.
For people that lost their home.
Who do people blame? They blame Hoover, Coolidge.
They blame Hoover. You know, it was, let's put from the turn of the century, everything, people were working, people were making money, they, well, anyhow, my dad had to work, when he went in the mill to work, he had to work 12 hours a day, and if he was getting, and if they're getting $9 a week, they're getting big money.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
My dad pulled my mother to Chicago, from Chicago to this was before I was born, to Montana.
Uh-huh.
And I wish she'd have went south. Wish she'd have went to Florida, to California, but mm-hmm. I guess never got there. Mm-hmm. Come back to Youngstown.
Did they come from the old country?
My mother come from the old country.
Where?
From Hungary. I have to put it Hungary, because mm-hmm. after the World War II, it was a part of, they divided that up and it was Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
But she used to tell me stories. She says, 1 week it belonged to Hungary, where she lived. The next week it belonged to Austria. It was either Hungary or Austria to be fighting every month, every week, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it seemed that way, and after World War I, they divided it up. They got Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia out of the way it was cut up.
Mm-hmm. Why did they come over here? Were there pogroms, or they just wanted a better life, or...?
No, my story, my mother tells me, you know, in the Jewish faith, they make a, when the father made a deal with another father that say, your son is going to marry my daughter, or vice versa,
mm-hmm.
it's done on a handshake, and
mm-hmm.
that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Well, she found out that... Her father had promised her to a man with a long white beard, an elderly man. So her brother was over here. She said to her brother, send me the money, send me a ticket, and you can have my dowry. In them days, the girls, even today, I think, with the Jewish faith, I don't know, I'll have to find out myself on that. Whether there's a dowry comes with the girl.
Mm-hmm.
She says, send me a ticket and I'll give you my dowry. The dowry was whatever the children were getting from the property,
mm-hmm.
what they had.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents had the property and the farm, and they used to hire the people from the village to work the farm. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I guess over there they were pretty good, I'd say well-to-do over
mm-hmm.
there
mm-hmm.
compared to others. But she said, send me a ticket. She said goodbye to her mother, and how many days she cried just thinking of her father. She couldn't say goodbye to him, because she knew he wouldn't let her come. He had it, in Italian they call it mashat,
uh-huh.
in Jewish it's matchmaker.
Uh-huh.
And she came over here, and she landed, her sister was in Keysport, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
That's where she wound up.
Mm-hmm.
She worked in a cigar factory.
There must have been a large Jewish population in Pittsburgh. I've had more people tell
mm-hmm.
me that they went to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they, you know,
they branched out because it seemed...
they didn't work in the steel mills.
No. Business. Because there was a lady and a gentleman that came on the same ship with my mother, were from
mm-hmm.
the same town.
Mm-hmm.
They landed in McKeesport.
Mm-hmm.
And as time, I'll tell you about that as time
mm-hmm.
goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And the she went to Philadelphia. I don't know who was in Philadelphia or what, but she wound up to Philadelphia. That's where she met my dad. My
mm-hmm.
dad comes from Romania.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Romanian Jew. My mother
mm-hmm.
comes from Romania.
Mm-hmm.
So they met him.
Why did he come?
He had to flee. Because if you don't get out of them, you go into the service.
Oh.
There was no two. After you're 12 years old,
automatic.
You automatically have to go into the service.
Uh-huh.
It's in Romania, Hungary, they were all the same.
Huh.
They were all the same. You had to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of them. That's the way they came over here. Somebody sending him a ticket or whatever. Some left with nothing.
You didn't have to have sponsors then.
Oh,
no.
They just came over. If you had a ticket, you had transportation, you come and
mm-hmm.
But they met him. I'm married there in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, I don't know. My mother used to say every time I got pregnant, your father would hit me in the head with potatoes. The women didn't know how to protect themselves, you know. He'd pick up a potato, hit her in the head with a potato. So I had three sisters
mm-hmm.
and a brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was about 7 or 8. My people split up. My mother remarried. She didn't marry a Jewish fellow. She
mm-hmm.
married a Greek fellow.
Mm-hmm.
As far as our family guys, I remember before, when I just a youngster, before I went to school, my mother done things. She had a, she went into the, she had duck, geese. She had geese. A whole barn full of geese.
Mm-hmm.
In them days, there was no laws. Everybody had chickens,
yeah.
geese. And every so many days, she'd put corn in a wash tub and let it soak
mm-hmm.
so it would swell up. And I remember I'd have to go out and bring it, catch a goose, bring it in on the porch, and they would open the goose's mouth, however, and put corn in, and then take the corn and pull it down its throat, you know. And that was fattening the goose
uh-huh.
because it didn't run. They were all in this
uh-huh.
barn-like, and they didn't run around. And the people would come and buy the goose.
Mm-hmm.
They had to take the goose to the chauffeur or whoever done the killing
mm-hmm.
to make sure it was kosher. But they'd come up and they'd feel the goose where they figured they were looking for fat. And that's what they cooked with.
Huh.
Chicken or goose or geese, goose or duck, fat.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And they call it schmaltz.
Uh-huh.
That's what they would cook with, bake with. You didn't use no lard, no way. See, that's the only thing they had. In them days, there was no oil like you get now in a
mm-hmm.
jar.
Mm-hmm.
It was either from the fat, the pig, lard, juice, goose.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they cooked with. Make soup and do anything. You could fry eggs with that too. It didn't make no difference, but that's what we used. I remember that.
Hmm.
So one day, my mother had enough. She bought my dad a horse and wagon down on the east end of Youngstown on Federal Street. I can remember that. There used to be what they call a livery stable.
Mm-hmm.
Now every Jew that was on the horse and wagon, some owned them, some didn't. You go down and you could rent them for the day. Cost you so much, whatever the price was, I don't remember. They'd go
mm-hmm.
to the market, whatever they do, rags or iron, you know, they go run. Used to run around the street, rags and iron, and they'd give a kid 3 cents for a bag of rags, maybe so much a piece of copper. But do you know them rags men send their children to college from that?
Hey.
And my mother tells me, Golden Age Bottling Company,
mm-hmm.
I forget his last name,
mm-hmm.
he done the same thing as my dad did, rags, iron, he bought a case of bottles. So instead of taking them back wherever he's supposed to sell them back to, he washed them out of something to put the juice in himself, and that's how he started Golden Age Bottling. From what I understand, yeah, from a case of bottles.
Good.
And,
you don't remember what his name was?
No, not really. I guess his first shop was up on Myrtle
mm-hmm.
Avenue.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Dunning, but that was our street.
Dunning, that they come from coal company.
Uh-huh.
Dunning Crump.
Yeah.
Guess that was coal company down
mm-hmm.
in back of South High School.
That's how
down
they started
by
in a coal company.
Pardon?
In a coal company.
Yeah, that was done from coal. Mm-hmm. They went into the bottling
mm-hmm.
when coal went to oil.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they got into that
ah.
bottling up there. They used to have J. you sell ice, or make ice up there where they're bottling.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be just up on Indianola there, used to be the Iceman used to go up there and buy ice. He was up there on Indianola or Youngstown. Run around here with cement now. Youngstown Building.
Mm-hmm.
Materials had an ice.
Mm-hmm.
There was only two.
Mm-hmm.
And then Isley's made ice too.
Yeah.
Isley's made ice.
Yeah.
Where these ice men used to go around and they go around the neighborhood selling ice.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have no refrigerator.
Right, right.
Stick a car.
These,
he had a
horse?
He
remember the horses when they
used to. Oh, geez. Where I lived on Wabash across the street was Sidney Brothers Coal Company, and they, on the corner of Wabash and Myrtle, they had a barn housed 8 horses.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy just would fill up the, you have to shovel the coal in and then shovel it out.
Mm-hmm.
The horses used to deliver the coal a couple of times. They had a scale there across the street. Used to, I remember that, yeah. First truck they come out with solid wheels, you know, on the steel, real hard, and boy, they'd break up the streets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they'd break up the streets, boy, and when they started that, having trucks, I remember the trucks, auto cars there, little by little, the horses went goodbye.
Mm-hmm. What was your first car?
I had a Ford Model A,
and
I got it when I didn't get him when I was 16. I must have got it when I was about 18.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a, got a driver. I don't remember whether I had to have a driver license or not.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
I was going to ask you, did they have to have drivers?
I don't remember whether I had to go get a driver license or not. Really, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just get in the car and go.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it cost me, that car cost me about $12. Bought it for $12. Them days. We were just coming out of the Depression. They were advertising Dodge, Chevrolet, $5.95, four something, five something, Chrysler's up. All that was, well, you figure, hey, like, you got to look at it in a perspective.
Uh-huh.
That was, you made $1,300 a year working in the mills. You done pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Because over $1,100, you have to start paying income tax.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure it took a half a year to buy a car.
Mm-hmm.
So same difference today.
Mm-hmm.
Same difference today, I would say. That's
but
why your cars are going up.
Mm-hmm.
But
you were sort of from a mixed family then. You know, with your father, not too. Did you still?
Oh, my father was Jewish.
Oh, I thought you said you.
No, my mother remarried, but not a Jewish family.
That's what I mean.
So we all, my sisters married Italian, my brother married a Ukrainian girl, and I married an Italian girl.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to pick up, in a sense, where I come from, what's it all about myself, because I didn't know. Because when I went in the service, I was in Pearl Harbor this day.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do? You happen to be there, that's all. It's like, you know, like they say today, to get ahead, you'd be in the right place at the right time. Well, I wasn't trying to get ahead, but I was in the right place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there, so it's, but through my
everyone
career.
Everyone was quite surprised, I wouldn't
Martin?
Imagine. Everyone was quite surprised.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was the first.
Why weren't they expecting anything?
Never did.
No?
Roosevelt says Pearl Harbor was impregnable, so they showed them different.
Uh-huh.
That's the way I look at it, that everybody was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
When they come the way the olive branch. But anyhow, through what we, I was aboard ship there on the USS Phoenix, and we come out of there, we figured we were going to bump up against the whole Japanese fleet, because I feel they'd have brought a landing force. They'd have took it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have took it. But through my time in the service, you couldn't get off the ship. The I spent 3 years aboard ship because they only supposed to spend two, and two on land, but the war broke out, and there I am. We were out through Australia escorting, and got into the Battle of Guadalcanal, and and I, from when I was a kid, I used to be called Play Skelly. When Hitler come along, I told the fellas in the service, I was stationed, if you ever come to Youngstown, I'm looking at the pass for Edward Bly. You'll never find him. I said, you go up South Avenue and hit around the Peacock Gardens and ask for Hitler or Jew Boy, then they'll tell you where he's at. I was with that. But it didn't, as a youngster, it didn't bother me. And when I went in the service, got stuck up on the ship, which, no fault of anybody, just things happened. And we had this big Polish fella come aboard ship as a second lieutenant. He got stuck aboard ship, and there was a little fella, we called him Feather Merchant, he was the second lieutenant. Well, finally they got the major, and the Captain Merchant, he come from VMI, and I was a PFC, and they said they're going to make three corporals, written and oral. Sometimes take the exam, I took the written, took the oral. So I come in second. Going to make corporal, a few more bucks, you know. As they made the first one, they made the third one. What could I say? I guess all the fellas say, you know, you should have been made corporal. Okay, well, major didn't want to make me. So 6 months later, it's going to take you to have one vacancy for corporal. They're going to make the first one. Comes in on design. Fine. Comes out the, he took the exam, come on, I'm first. They made the second one.
Oh, no.
So about that time, I says to the sergeant, and sergeant, I want to see the first sergeant, I want to see the major. What about first one? So I finally get up to see him. He was shaving. Stepping in his quarters aboard ship. Private First Class back, Black would like to talk to the mayor. Well, he says, Eddie, speak up, go ahead. And I went on to explain all this examinations, and then I popped it. I says, Major, it wouldn't be because I was Jewish. Get out, get out, get out, get out. Take me out of his. So anyhow, after a while, we came back to the States and went down through the Panama Canal, come up into Philadelphia Navy Yard. So I says to the sergeant, I says, he come down, he says, you know, he says, damn, he's gone already. He's went right away. I said, well, let's go up and see the Feather Merchant, we used to call him, you know, the captain. But he had made major in the meantime, too. Let's go see the major. Maybe he can switch me into a corporal rank. Went up and see him. Let you know. Damke was this major's name. He was off at 8 o'clock off the ship. 12 o'clock, I had the corporal rank. So what's, my wife said, do you think, I said, what's it look like? What could you say? Because I was, she told me that. But, then I come out of the service and I got married to a sweetheart that was waiting for me in 43 and I took her down to Quantico. And we had a nice place down there. And one day I was instructing rifle pistol. And I like it down there. I heard scuttlebutt, what they call scuttlebutt, that the butcher, fella was butchering, was thrown in the brig because he left the meat, the pork loins he was supposed to cut up, he left them out and got stewed and the meat spoiled. So he got 30 days bread and water. So I went to the first, I said, hey, I said, I hear you need a butcher. Yeah, you know how to go. I said, I watched the guy at home at the butcher shop. So he said, come on with me. I went with him and took me into this major shop. He said, he told Major I want to change you in the Marine Corps. You either had staff, which was office, cooks, bakers, what have you,
mm-hmm.
then you had line duty.
Mm-hmm.
I decided I was going to be a butcher. But they didn't send me to no school or anything. What I learned right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a little bit of experience in cooking before I went in the
mm-hmm.
service.
Mm-hmm.
But I never put that down. But I think the major says, oh, he said, that's what we want. Somebody that wants to do this. We don't want to make from a truck driver to be butchering. He says, you know how to butcher? I said, Major, butchers weren't born. Okay. I'll tell you, it was something. Then the first cook come in and showed me how to butcher. I was no hurry. I sliced the loin, lay it over, chop it off. Slice the loin, lay it over, chop it off. After I got it all cut up, then I chipped the corners. They were all about a half inch thick. This fella come out. Hey, the first cook, you know, do it this way. He put the loin on the block and he went way in with that cleaver. Up, down the thing. You had him 2 inches thick. You had him tissue paper thin. You had him a half inch, an inch, three quarter. And I said, well, when your cooks get this, you're the first cook now. When your cooks get this, how are they going to separate this sizes? You'll get burnt pork chop, you'll get raw pork chop, you'll get some done. How are you going to feed? I said, I just come off the line. I said, I appreciate it, but I'll do it the way I started it.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you. We're just trying to help you out. Okay. Done very well there. I was in Quantico.
Mm-hmm.
And I could picture, you know, if you get one thick, one thin, how are you going to cook them? And all they do is put them in pans and put them in the oven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How are you going to cook them?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say this. When the government bought, during the war, they bought meat or anything, it was prime. It was the best.
Mm-hmm.
They always bought the best. There was no getting around it. Always the best. But it was nice. And I come home and I had my heart for California. Didn't get there. Wife didn't want to leave, but let's put it as both, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have three children, all college, out of college. And
what religion did they follow?
They followed the mother, Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to church with her. Sure,
mm-hmm.
I did. I landed in Philadelphia. The way my mother wrote to me, says there's a cousin that had come from Europe in 40. In 40, I was in California, and that's when I joined the service. As a cousin in Philadelphia. She didn't have no address or nothing. She says he works as a waitress in a Jewish restaurant. So I go up in the Jewish neighborhood. I found them. That's why I come here.
Mm-hmm.
Why I joined the Jewish Center. There's another second cousin of mine up in Detroit sent a whole brochure of he's doing the whole thing. The whole family tree on his side,
mm-hmm.
on our side, and his wife's side.
Mm-hmm.
But he asked me about this cousin Benny. I remember meeting Benny, and then I figured out. Nobody had no address. He didn't. Nobody had. So let me try the Jewish Center. And I come up here and I talk to Mr. Engel. Man, the teletype starts. They got connections all over the country. In fact, all over the world.
Here.
Here, for all the Jewish center. But as a Jewish center, to tidy, computer, it's all up there. And there's not Ruth Holder, but there's another Ruth that in a couple of hours, waited around. And they couldn't locate him. Either he moved out of the area, or he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
They can't locate him. And I seen what they had here. And I've been in Youngstown, let's say, all my life outside of the service. And I used to pass this center for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
When I come to see about this cousin, the wife and I, we seen what was here. We like it enough. Joined it to the Jewish center, and I'm
mm-hmm.
finding out. I can count on one hand, maybe. Less. Many Jewish fellows I've been raised, mostly in Youngstown, but I went to the Jewish.
You ever go to the temple?
I went to the temple when I was a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
I learned Beis Abba, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
My father says he teach me, he didn't teach, learn nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But first time I was in a synagogue was when they had their holiday here, when they put up the spikus, is it? I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's how much I know about this. Now I'm finding where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I go to this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Saying just to learn, pick up your word. Mm-hmm. I remember things, words and sentences where people are talking, and start to pick up the words, you know.
Good.
And my wife's Italian, and she's interested, so we'll both learn.
Good.
Never
good.
Too late.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy the people here, seeing what they have, and the way people are treated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing when I retired from Fisher Body, General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out there 6 months. They asked me if I want to be a foreman. When I went out there in 1970, December 1970, on up, 71, 72, 73, 5, opportunity galore for young people.
Yeah.
Opportunity, they want to get into management. It was up to them.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to be a foreman? Well, I said, they asked me, and I told them if I don't, somebody else will, and they hired me when I was 55. So what can I do? Show my appreciation for them hiring me? Yeah, but I stood on the former for about 2.5 years, and
mm-hmm.
I give it back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was able to come back to production.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
And I carried my seniority with the
mm-hmm.
union, and one fellow says to me, oh, before they asked me to be a foreman, I was performing my work. And one fellow says, why don't you two go over here while we unload a rack of size, and then you come back. I says, what do you want me to do while you're loading? He says, just go walk around. No, I said, if they see you two can do it, then that's all I'll put here on the job shortly, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I says, you load a rack, and then you stick around right here where you're supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
and then my buddy and I will load a rack.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll either take, I'll put a rack here, and we'll put a rack there. You take one side, put it on yours, we'll
mm-hmm.
take the next one.
Mm-hmm.
That way, they're not going to cut anybody. These people, I'll tell you, but anyhow, well, shortly, he said, company man. He shortly after that, I made foreman, and he said, see, I told you to come in. I said, give me 6 months. I said, I'm going to own the place. You know, you have to say something to him. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was nice, though. But I like it here, and I enjoy the people, but there was things, you remember, and there's a lot of things you like to
mm-hmm.
forget, but
yeah.
you can't forget.
Yeah.
Just like today. It's been 42 years, I can't forget, because that was the first time I cried
mm-hmm.
with a young man in the service,
mm-hmm.
and the last time,
mm-hmm.
because these kids were just caught.
Ah, yeah.
This cot right here, because the night before, see over there, I don't know if you ever been out to Hawaii. All they had was one hotel. It was all the servicemen, Schofield Barracks, Hickettsville, the fleet coming in. They didn't have the facilities. So you had to be back aboard ship at 1 o'clock. The streets were clean, the servicemen. All of, some of these youngsters was in on a minority cruise. A minority cruise is, you go in when you're 17, your parents have to sign the day you're 21 as your discharge date. Few beers, they were sick. Even all over the place, the doctor. Robin, see, you didn't have to get up on Sunday. There was no getting up. The only ones that had to be up there was when the colors went. When the colors went, that's when it let it go. 8 o'clock down there. Here, I think it was 12. You can't forget. But still, I always told my wife, and I'll tell everybody else, the Japanese didn't lose the war. They beat us. Economy-wise, right now.
Yeah.
The way this country is, we used to be a producing country, little by little, even more so. We're not going to be a producing country, and they're going to have two classes here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a politician. Either you're going to have the money, or you're going to be poor.
Yeah.
And they're going to hold you just for them. Whoever's doing it, I don't know, but I don't think I'll be here to find out. Really.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you interviewing
me.
Maybe I went off the handle a little.